Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Things have been looking up in Fort Lauderdale this week. My mom will be headed home in a couple of weeks. Her pelvic fracture has mended more rapidly than anticipated. There's been great progress on the electronic project I've been helping with. Lorraine and I have been watching lots of Netflix movies. Actually, Lorraine's been watching a lot of Netflix movies. I watch when I can, but haven't had that much fun. You know, we have a recurring theme on the New American Dream radio show where we warn you about Big B. I was surprised to see Big B's mentioned in a newsletter that I received today about a new book. Actually, it wasn't Big B's, it was just B's, but it said that buzz you're hearing might be B's. I thought maybe I should write back and warn him to watch out for the Big B's. Speaking of books, Johnny Moon is getting closer to publication. Here's what writer Wild Bill Black Olive said about it. There's much here in Mike Palachek's latest. Kennedy assassination's impress on its nation, a nation which already had pretension, general difficulty between children and their adults. Johnny Moon has one decent relationship with a nun. Much between the lines craft here, and I enjoy the last part where Johnny Moon and several friends have no fear for floundering cop. Authority floundering forever from taking itself so seriously, but the young will transcend. Humans are fools, each to his folly. Before emotional maturity, Johnny Moon can figure, where is reality? Bill's going to be joining us later on the show. We'll be talking about Bill Black Olive, not about Johnny Moon. But Johnny Moon, the book, will be out very soon, and I think it's one of Mike Palachek's best, and I hope you'll be looking for a copy. I'd like to wish a speedy recovery to Tom Feely of Information Clearinghouse. He's having some sort of hospital stuff done, angioplasty, I think. Information Clearinghouse is one of my three favorite places for news and commentary on the internet. There's a lot there that doesn't get printed in mainstream sites. my other favorites, yeah, since you asked, Citizens for Legitimate Government and World News Trust. In just a couple of months, October 11th to be exact, a number of activists will be occupying Freedom Plaza with the stated intention of staying there till the USA pulls out of Afghanistan. Well, I hope they have sleeping bags or tents or something, because they stand by that intention, they're going to be there a long time. But I really hope it'll make a difference, and I look forward to seeing how it turns out. And now, my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Good evening, Chuck. That's good news about your mom. I didn't know that. Tonight we welcome back Bill Black Olive, as you mentioned, and Mike Maggio from Bill is from Port Aransas, Texas. That's in the southeast part of Texas. And Mike is from Herndon, Virginia, and I'm not sure exactly where that's at. So we're coming to you tonight from Vancouver, Canada, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Port Aransas, and Herndon. And I just want to say that we're really sincerely so happy you're able to join us. And I just want to say that it truly does mean a lot to us. Len in Vancouver, Chuck in Fort Lauderdale, and me up here lost in the woods of northern Minnesota. By the way, I'm coming to you again from the parking lot of McDonald's in Cloquet, Minnesota, because our internet still doesn't work. And I've got all the visors down. I got my headphones on, and I'm looking across the street at the National Guard unit, hoping the police don't come. We're just happy that you took time to listen to what we have to offer here. We enjoy this time, and we think it's a lot of fun. And we also, be quite honest, we really think that we're changing America a little bit each Thursday, and we work hard at it. And it would not be possible for Chuck and me to have our fun without the help of Len in Vancouver and the financial support of Elaine and Matt in Washington, D.C. with the Rock Creek Free Press. Just FYI, it cost them $50 each week to have our time together, and we seem to be doing the right things. But I just want to say that if anyone else is welcome to welcome to support us, we'll put your advertising on the air. All we want to do about that is to make that $50. So any additional money we get will just go towards reducing how much Rock Creek Free Press has to contribute, and there won't be any profits for either Chuck or myself. On current events, I want to say that Ruth and I received a welcome check in the mail a couple weeks ago from the National War Tax Resistance Fund. We had been fined $5,000 by the IRS. I had sent back when we lived in Sheldon, I had sent a crossed out tax form in, a black magic marker, and then I had a letter saying how I didn't want to support the war. And we were fined $5,000. We paid it. And this tax fund, they actually worked on it for a couple of years, and they sent us a big check, and that was just amazing that that some people out there get together and they sent us this money to help out. It was just really cool. The other thing I wanted to mention was an April Gallup. April Gallup is the woman at the Pentagon who was sitting right there when the whatever hit the Pentagon, and she escaped with her child, right? Her child was with her right there, and she is suing Bush and Cheney for being in on 9/11, and I don't know where that is at right now. And I think if someone would know what the update on that, if they could just let me know. And also the debt ceiling, debt ceiling, we're like Chicken Little. None of us even knew before what a debt ceiling is, and now it's on the tip of our tongues when we wake up every morning. And I just want to offer this little nugget, maybe cut the military. If we cut the military, we could have anything we want, including candy for supper. The next thing, next week, we'll have forgotten all about the debt ceiling, and we'll be running around the yard pulling our hair, shouting purple and pink petunias. And as Bill Hicks said, we are a virus with shoes. I went fishing a couple weeks ago with someone I met up here in Duluth, and we had an actual boat. It was real major league, big-time northern Minnesota fishing in a boat at dawn. And we actually caught fish. Here, first, before I get into that, I want to have a quote from William Shire. And he writes about the fall of the Third Reich. How difficult it is to escape the dread consequences of a regime's calculated and incessant propaganda. how useless it was to even try to make contact with a mind which had become warped and for whom the facts of life had become what Hitler and Goebbels, with their cynical disregard for the truth, said they were. That's William Shirer, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And not to cut off my only access to a boat, but I just want to mention this. We had the conversation in the boat. I know this guy was a so-called Christian. He doesn't like universal health care. We argued about whether there is a God or not. Well, poor people, he seemed to think we're not people, just not smart enough, and they deserve what they get. And then an F-16 flew over from the air base in Duluth, and he said, they never get old. And I thought, they're old already, you know. He was like venerating the F-16, and you have a Christian there, so-called Christian. And I just want to think, you know, these people who call themselves Christians, if I could just have my two cents, they have absolutely no idea. They stand 180 degrees opposite of what Jesus was, if he existed, if he's a real God. But if he was real, these Christians stand exactly opposite of what he stood for. And you would never, not in 1,000 fishing trips at dawn or otherwise, convince them that they're wrong. He was talking, I said, well, I didn't like Palin because she was for hunting wolves from airplanes. And he responded that, well, if they need to be hunted, they need to do that because we need to protect the ranchers. And I said, well, just maybe we just need to keep down the population of ranchers. Maybe have a daily bag limit on ranchers instead of hunting wolves. I want to say that I really think that October occupation of Washington, D.C., and also the CLG September plan for the seize D.C., while I won't be there, I'll be doing the show and I'll be writing, and I guess I've chosen that writing is going to be my way of revolution. I just hope them the best of luck, and I hope that I think this is great. You have to do something beyond the Democratic Party. You just, you can't, I don't know. I ran for Congress as a Democrat once, and I just don't think that's it. Barack Obama is a phony, and good luck to the people going to be there in October. And I know that they're not afraid, and because they are so courageous, it's going to help us all, and we also cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
Sponsored this week by the Minutemen, guarding Americans' borders from poor people. Our own grandparents, great-grandparents, were poor, and they came here from other places. Huddled masses yearning to be free, fighting for freedom from poor people, taking aims at frightened lasses crouching by a tree. We urinate on the Statue of Liberty. We defecate on Dulles Island. We've got ours crunched tight in our cold, dead, clammy hand. In just 60 seconds, we're able to desecrate the whole idea of America. We are the Minutemen.
I'd like to welcome now our guest, Mike Maggio from he's from Herndon, Virginia, and I need to find his phone number here. I thought I had sent that, but I'm going to have to fill here for a little bit. I'm Mike Maggio. I asked him one time. I said, how do you pronounce your name? And he said, well, it rhymes with DiMaggio. And he said Maggio, but you can also pronounce DiMaggio, DiMaggio or DiMaggio. So I think there's an email. Okay, Mike Maggio has published fiction, poetry, travel, and reviews in the Potomac Quarterly Review, the Montserrat Review, the L.A. Weekly, the Washington City Paper, Beltway Quarterly, Pig Iron, D.C. Poets Against the War, and others. His books include Your Secret is Safe with Me from Black Bear Publications, Oranges from Palestine, Stifling Through the Madness, and Democracy. He is an assistant adjunct professor at Northern Virginia Community College and a graduate of George Mason University's MFA program in creative writing. He lives in Herndon, Virginia with his wife and children. His website is www.mikemaggio.net. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I can hardly hear you.
If I speak up, does that help at all?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, I'll speak up. Sometimes I speak too low. Mike, how are you doing? What's it? Is Herndon, is that a suburb of D.C. by chance? Mike Maggio from Herndon, Virginia. He's a assistant adjunct professor at Northern Virginia Community College and a graduate of George Mason University's MFA program in creative writing. Hello, Mike. Are you there now?
Yes, I am here.
Okay, Mike. Why don't you just take it away and read the poems you had planned, and if you want to give any background or any anecdotes, take it away. I won't be commenting in between time. Just go ahead.
Okay, great. I'm going to read four poems from three different books. The first two are from my forthcoming book called Haunted Garden, and this first poem is called Brownies. You offered me brownies. You were standing in the stairwell, clutching your tooth in your hand, wondering if somehow you could glue it back, counting on several extension cords strung piggyback that snaked down the stairs to a socket in the common laundry room. You looked at me with your frenzied eyes, with your fragile face. You said, your music has a lot of drums. Then you gave me brownies you could not afford to bake that day. I took them to the privacy of my apartment, glad to get away from you, glad to escape your incessant chatter. Months later, after you had disappeared, I saw you in the Safeway parking lot. You were living out of your car. No brownies, no electricity, just your car and what remained of you. I hurried on so you would not see me, or worse. Strange how, years later, as I squint through these hollow glasses at a woman squatting on a downtown street, huddled in humiliation, her face worn from years of neglect. The taste of your brownies continues to taunt my tongue. And this next poem is called The Path to Eternal Happiness. Make a left at the turn in the next century. Keep going until you come to a crook in the road. There'll be a patch of wildflowers on the right, and Godot will be waiting at the gate. Shout hallelujah three times. Take two aspirin and rest in peace. This next poem is from a collection called Oranges from Palestine, which is a book I wrote mostly while I was living in the Middle East. And this poem is called That Day on the Gaza. It was written during the first Palestinian Intifada, or the first Palestinian uprising in the occupied territories. That day on the Gaza. They were tired. They had waited 20 years. Too many houses had fallen, too many olive groves destroyed. The songs of Fayrouz veiled their patient tongues. The barbed wire fence encage the camps like a prison. That day on the Gaza, the children were playing in the broken gutter. The men in keffiyehs were waiting restlessly for their bus to the quarries. There was a woman in black squatting on the sidewalk. She was selling fruits and herbs. She was washing her wares in her quiet tears. A young boy picked up an angry stone. Then the soldiers came. Then there was wailing. Then the sounds of silence died. Give me a stone. I don't need no gun. Guns were made by the hands of the warden. Stones were made by the hand of God. Give me a stone. I will fill up the sky. The sky is a place that has no limits. Freedom is a tree that never dies. And this last poem that I'm going to read is a peace poem. It's called Paper Cranes, and it's dedicated to a friend of mine called Anthony, who went to Japan, and you probably know that there are some monuments that are built in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in remembrance of the bombing of those two cities during World War II. And the children, they make these origami paper cranes and they put them on these monuments. And that was the inspiration for this poem. Paper cranes, yellow, red, orange origami, child-made cranes, strung like trawls of fish in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Some fall off and drift like autumn leaves, shrouding the countryside like flames weeping, tumbling like autumn leaves. Some fall off and drop like tears, mourning the charred earth like wailing widows, raining like silver tears. Some fall off and whisk away in the wind, speckling the day's sun like ashen memories, howling in the fiery wind. Some fall off and glide gracefully to the ground, thin, delicate paper cranes like snowflakes falling to the ground. Some fall off and spread like cherry blossoms, pinking the brown earth like gossamer on the horizon, papering the world with cherry blossoms. Some fall off and sail up to the sky, rising on blue wings like dandelion dreams, floating up to the sky. Some fall off and make it back to America, scattering over the cities like confetti, like multicolored messages. Paper peace cranes swarming over America. And that are the four poems.
Mike, thank you very much. Do you have any readings or anything you want to talk about, upcoming events?
I don't have anything scheduled right now. I'm waiting for this book to come out, and then I will start scheduling some readings. I do have an exhibit. I'm working with an artist on a collaboration, and we have an exhibit coming up at George Mason University in the fall, at the Fall for the Book Festival, and I may also have another exhibit at a gallery at Northern Virginia Community College later this fall. And then hopefully I'll have lots of other things coming on, and I will keep you informed.
Thank you very much. I hope you'll be able to. There might be I think you said there might be a problem with your teaching schedule, but I hope we'll be able to talk to you again in a couple or two or three months.
Yes, I'd love to do this again in a couple of months. Just let me know, and I'll be available.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, and have a good night.
Thank you, Mike. And,
Rock Creek
thank you, everybody,
gently
for
flows
listening.
Through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the Federal City. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
At the end of the day, remember that this day was brought to you by Operation Northwoods Spray Deodorant. With Operation Northwoods, the fog hangs in the air long after you've gone. Back a few decades ago, some people in government planned to carry out murders, crash airplanes, have fake news reports to fool the American people into invading Cuba. It didn't happen. Only because John F. Kennedy, a real president, was in office. But then the ones who liked the idea of Operation Northwoods killed Kennedy. And now we have fake everything. Fake president, fake news, and fake wars. Well, the killing and dying are real. It's just that everything else is baloney. Operation Northwoods. It hangs in the air.
For what reason, we have no idea. We'd also like to shout out to those men and women serving in 10,000 countries and municipalities, islands, peninsulas, knolls, glens, gullies, inlets, deltas, fjords, and firths overseas, serving in Berlin and Aachen and Baden and Pfaffen and Mumm und Dierdorf und Daden und Dasher und Prancer und Donder and Blitzen. We need you. For what reason, we have no idea, but thank you for all you do, and we are pleased to send you 50% of our tax dollars. For what reason, we have no idea. But because you are there and they thank you at ball games and on beer commercials, we thank you for all you do. For what reason, we have no idea.
Bill Blackolive, often called Wild Bill, is a fascinating guy. I think he's a little bit like a character in some crazy book, but he's real. Almost realer than real, as my old drama teacher used to say. Bill cares passionately about what happens in America. He stands up for lost causes. He wants to know the truth about things. And he wants us to know the truth. Bill Blackolive, welcome to New American Dream Radio Show.
Chuck?
Hello, Bill.
Hi, Chuck.
Bill, I know a little bit about your history, but most of our viewers really don't know who you are. So, since we're going to have you back, you know, every 2 or 3 months, and I think they ought to get to know you.
Okay.
So, I'd like to hear how you got to be where you are.
Well, from the start, I was just not very adjusted.
What do you mean, not adjusted?
All the way back to my childhood, you know, I was not ready for the first grade.
Okay.
I never did well in school. I couldn't handle it.
Ah.
So it was just a bad experience. The whole thing for me has been a bad experience, and I got on through for various reasons. I have a certain talents, and I tended to have certain friends, so I managed to get on through. But I have never been adjusted. In short, I have just not been adjusted. It's been a very strange world for me.
Well, the world is a strange world, I think. That might be a good thing. Perhaps you just...
Except I have to eat, you know, and everyone gets pissed off because I can't make a living. Of course, by now I'm pretty old, but
Well,
but I wasn't able to handle too many hours at once just to get some money to get some food.
Mm-hmm.
The monotony drives me crazy. I can load trucks for a day or two, you know, but after a while, the monotony gets to me, and I can't do it. Simply cannot do it. And I'm asthmatic, and I hurt my back, and so on, you know. Fortunately, I've been physically strong, so I wasn't pushed around. But in any case, I was never able to adjust. You know, my women would think they could change me, get me to do this or that, and eventually they would give up and leave me. So it's been tough, and I have a grown daughter now, and I'm very close with her. And I was good in English. I could handle English.
Mm-hmm.
Which I found out to my surprise when my mother had me see a psychiatrist. They gave me an aptitude test. And they said, well, he's good in English, and he's got theoretical reasoning. He could be a scientist, and blah, blah, you know, but I can't tolerate school. Never could, so that didn't work out. But in any case, being as I was able to handle English and talk and carry on, I eventually became a writer. But my stuff's pretty far out, and so I've not made a living there either. Though I have some, I have a little fame here and there, but I haven't been able to make a living. So by now, I just take care of. I'm taking care of my old mother. So it's all pretty funny, you know. But I'm taking care of my 91-year-old mother. But you know, it's a colorful story, but it's been pretty hard on me, really.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, you know, I've lost I lost all my women. I fell in love. I was inclined to fall insanely in love because I thought maybe if I could get organized like that, I could tolerate work a little better. But it didn't work. It didn't happen. You know, it didn't matter if my wife was being nice to me or not. I couldn't toil too long. Couldn't do monotonous stuff very long.
Yeah.
Anyway. So it's just
you kind of live outside the box, right?
Absolutely, but I had no choice. You know, it isn't that I thought I'd go ahead and be a beatnik. I had no choice. You know, the beatniks were attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of a late beatnik, and then the hippies happened, and I happened to be around that. But in any case. It hasn't been easy.
Right.
The women I picked up didn't want to support me. I didn't get the right ones.
I guess you picked the wrong women.
That's right. I got the wrong women.
It's a strange place. This world.
It's weird. Yeah. Quite bizarre. Yeah. You know, I've never. Got over just how strange all this is. And like I was talking to you a little earlier, I like William Bloom because he's talking all these facts, and then finally he just tosses his hands up, and this latest piece he's done, he just says, but after all, these bureaucrats are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are my words, not his, but he says, after all, they they are erratic, and you can't expect them to be sensible in any government, anywhere in the world. After all, the human being is nuts.
Oh,
so it's hard to get the truth. Besides the greed and the evil and all this, it's hard to get the truth because human beings are just each to his own. You know, I have my problems, and these other guys, they're able to go ahead and be a bureaucrat, but they're still crazy. And I may be more sane than they are, you know. But I couldn't tolerate I couldn't go through the ropes like they do.
What,
I'm probably
greater
than most of them are, really, you know.
Yeah. What have you done? You know, you say you've had trouble, you know, holding jobs and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
How have you managed to get by? What do you do?
Well, just, each year was a different trip. That is true. I was seldom more than a year in a place.
Uh-huh.
Now, I took care of a farmhouse in New Mexico for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And then that fell apart eventually. But usually each year is a separate trip. I mean, I say a farmhouse, I was taking care of this guy's place that he had some horses to feed and so forth.
Right.
This dentist out of Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Hmm.
But I pissed him off because I would have these... Well, it's kind of a long story. The friends of mine would come out there and damage the property in some way or the other because they were drunk and crazy or something, you know. Anyway, so I always have these problems, and it doesn't work out that I'm very long in one place. So I eventually did get married. In fact, I have been married twice.
Hmm.
And while married, I would be a year or two here or there, but it never works out. Like I said, I didn't have any rich girlfriends. They thought I should support them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know. Each year's been kind of a different trip, so I've been in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while I was writing, thinking if I could just get a book published, then that could lead to other stuff getting published.
Right. And maybe I could. How many books have you written, Bill?
I have written several books. I'm not like Mike Palachek who could just turn them out. I have done several books, and I have three or four or so that are capable of being sellers.
Mm-hmm.
As I think about it, in any case, books just kind of happened to me. I haven't been able to just sit down and plan a book. I would start writing about something, and I would usually end up discarding it. But I do have this Texas Gang, Tales from the Texas Gang, and it took me several years just getting into it, realizing that I was writing a book. I was just doing sketches, and then I saw that I was doing a book, so I went ahead and kept that in mind. And then I thought it was going to be three books, but it was just part one, two, and three.
Mm.
So I got that together, and I've had all kinds of acclaim over that. For example, William Burroughs and people I've met here and there.
Oh.
But in any case, books just happen to me or don't, and usually something I would begin working at wouldn't turn out that much. I tend to do sketches of reality. The Texas mm-hmm. Gang book became a fictional piece because I was taking friends of mine whom I grew up with and putting us back 100 years. So that left me a lot of room to work with, and I could just do whatever I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a whole lot of feeling about that, so I was able to keep at that one until I was sure of what I was doing and went ahead and did this main work of mine. But since then, I mainly do sketches. I do autobiographical stuff, and all of that I have done could make another couple of books if someone realized that, you know, and wanted to clean it up a little bit or edit it and so forth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, I haven't written too many books. I have another fictional book, this mystical, not really pornographic, it's erotica. It's about a couple who they only want each other, but they go in and out of reincarnational sketches. They have memories together, you know, that they're old souls together. So that makes a kind of a erotica novel, and I happened to throw that one together okay. Took me about a year. Oh. Whereas the Texas Gang fiction took about 10 years.
Wow.
But otherwise, I've just done autobiographical sketches, really, you know, which is plenty funny and attractive to people, and people like to read that. Many people like that best, those friends of mine. They don't want to read the Texas gang stuff because it's too violent or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain people who prefer that just to read my real life stuff.
Well, you have shared some of your recent thoughts with me in email, and I find them very, you know, quite fascinating. And so I hope that maybe we can work together and get some of this stuff.
Well, sure, Chuck. But you know, it seems like all of us hip guys just don't have any money. You know?
Well, yeah.
But if you ever got on your feet, sure, you know, we could clean up some of that or edit it or cut it down a little bit, you know, and do Bukowski type stuff. You know, I like Bukowski published a book of his letters, and it was all whittled down considerably, and they show you where they do that. But he's a funny guy, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the there's people who like to read this kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm
pretty unusual. My trip is one of a kind, you know. I'm aware of that I'm a very singular person. Anyway, so
okay.
You know, I'm 70 years old. However, I look 50 because I work out and take care of myself. I was always afraid someone would beat me up, so I guess
okay.
I look pretty good for being 70 years old.
Well, all right then. That's good. I've enjoyed visiting with you tonight, Bill.
Okay, Chuck.
I think we're going to go on and do our final segment of the show. But I really appreciate your coming on. And
I'll be listening.
So talk to you in a couple months.
Okay, well, Chuck, thank you very much. Looking forward to the show.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, adios.
Adios.
And now for your third period American history moment. Things that should be, but never will be, mentioned in a United States junior high or high school history class. If Americans knew their real history rather than the nursery rhyme Disneyland version, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush would not be able to ride together in a golf cart down the third baseline at an American baseball game to the cheers of the crowd. Rather, they would be greeted with tomatoes, fists, and handcuffs. And that's the truth. Any talk about wackos or conspiracy theories are just smoke screens from the decoder rings of the guilty. You believe them and call the ones crazy who are trying with all their hearts and souls to tell you the truth. The Bushes know it too and are just pinching themselves each morning, unable to believe they have been able to succeed on monstrous lies for so long. Join us next week on Third Period American History Moment when we talk about naming airports and highways after good people rather than idiots and bad people. Have a good night and sleep tight.
Helen Woodson will be released from prison in September after being in prison since 1984 for protesting against the United States military, and the United States Federal Bureau of Prison, 1984. How many trips to the grocery store to pick up last-minute things did she miss? How many soccer games, summer basketball camp? How many Sunday morning Bible study sessions could she have attended if she'd stayed home rather than running off to protest? What good did she do? What did she change? 27 years. That's missing all the elementary school years, junior high years, high school and college years, marriage, first job, first moves to a better home for some child. She pounded on the lid of a nuclear weapon, the concrete lid of a United States nuclear weapon designed and built by Americans, paid for by Americans to kill millions of people on the other side. The ones who invented and designed and built that weapon poured the concrete for the weapon silo, put up the fence that Helen and her friends snipped to get in. All those people went to all those soccer games and Bible study sessions and were in all those bowling leagues and got paid and bought homes and barbecue, and they baptized grandchildren. They paid taxes and did not fight the United States or the United States military or the United States Federal Bureau of Prisons. In September, they will walk the sidewalks with Helen Woodson. Helen Woodson will be allowed on the same elevator as they in the same store. They might stand in the same line waiting to pay for a Snickers bar and a cafe latte. In a few years, then a few more, all will be dead. If there is a Jesus, he'll come down to the graves and walk with some and hug and smile and wipe away tears. He will touch the chains and they will fall away. He will tell a joke and they will laugh. And they will walk, then trot, then run to join the party. And the others will be left to rot and turn to slime and be washed away by the rising rivers and forgotten. And that will be the end of that.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. It was finally time for the Home Helper Show drawing. The morning dawned with one gray cloud in the sky. Michael M. had hid out in a train car, and it looked like he would be there at the show. Rosie the Riveter, the group home resident, who had had something to do with the sit-down strike in the driveway way back when M. rammed his moped into the war memorial, was working her cell phone to get the troops together to attend the drawing, and John from the underground, John the Baptist, peed in the war memorial flowers just after his morning coffee and stood on his tiptoes to see out the basement window to watch all the foot and car traffic headed past, mumbling something to himself, reminiscent of Bill Murray in Caddyshack, something about every flush of his toilet being an explosion, blowing them all away.
From all directions, all sidewalks and alleys and streets, streams of people moved toward the Liberty Elementary School gymnasium. Kids rode bikes. Old people shuffled along on walkers tricked out with tennis balls. Farmers drove into town in pickups and three-wheelers. Young couples hustled along, pushing double and triple-wide strollers. M climbed down from the boxcar after straightening his paper bag bed, washing out his cup and tin, and burning his garbage. Buck and Mrs. Snort arrived at the elementary school outside the kitchen door. Inside, they were introduced to the lovely young Home Helper Show cast. "At the end of the day," said one of the cast members, wiping his head, "it's not the heat so much. Bottom line, it's the humidity." Buck and the Mrs. Snort crouched and fired four pointer fingers at the cast members. "Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level," they shouted together. They chatted in the kitchen amid bun boxes, 50-gallon trays of mac and cheese and weenie casserole, waiting for the time to make their entrance.
M joined the sidewalk brigade wearing the new used hat he had found. At the front walk entrance, where all the streams came together, he saw his wife and children headed inside. He fell in behind and followed them into the gymnasium filled with 1 million gray metal folding chairs. They found seats in the middle. M followed them as if they were together and slipped into the row behind. Rosie marched down the sidewalk from the group home with Sandra, Teresa, Joseph, Crystal, and Mickey. Other members of their troop joined them at each intersection. At 10 a.m., the elementary school principal, Carol Soup Campbell, checked her wristwatch with the clock on the kitchen wall above the three-compartment sink. "Shall we?" she smiled at Buck and Mrs. Buck Snort and the lovely young cast, checking their makeup in the stainless steel refrigerator, and guided them out of the kitchen, across the lunchroom to the door in the hall that led to the stage. Soup put up one finger that meant, "Just 1 minute, please." She went through the door to check the crowd and the seating arrangements and the podium and stuff. She nodded to the new band director, who raised his chin in return, then tapped on a music stand. 1, 2, 3. He waved his baton and the band jumped into the up-tempo Home Helper Show theme music. The principal hurried back to open the door. She smiled and waved the cast and mayor and wife inside. As they walked onto the stage, the crowd stood to clap and cheer, "Yay!" For several moments, the cast and crowd crouched and fired pointed fingers back and forth. Rosie and her group stood for a while in the back and then dispersed. The band played the national anthem, and the principal led the crowd in the Our Sun God. She then introduced each of the cast members in turn to the squeals and snapshots and screams of the crowd and press. L-I-B-E-R-T-Y, Liberty! The cast members led the crowd in a pep rally, each holding up a letter made with their publicity photo on a piece of hardboard. And now, began one of the lovely young male cast members, your newly re-elected mayor, Buck Snored. Oh my!
Buck took the microphone. Thank you, Tommy. And thank you! He crouched and pointed a finger at the crowd. All of you gathered right here today, and also those everywhere in radio and television land. He pointed at one of the TV cameras and the local radio announcer in the front row. And most of all, thank you to those who have taken the time for their busy work week to register for the Home Liberty Home Helper Show segment drawing. He raised a clenched fist. The crowd rose and clapped their hands over their head. Yay! This fall, Buck began, the crowd stood again to cheer. He bid them to sit with an open hand, pressed not so gently downward. This fall, the Home Helper Show will be coming to Liberty. The crowd stood and cheered to film a special. Again, all stood. This is an all-American city, the all-American town. This is why they're coming here. We are the American dream. We live in the American dream. The American dream is what we're about. It's what allows us to keep going. He looked down, stepped slightly forward, and lowered his voice. They will not stop us. They want to paralyze us. We'll improve our lives. We'll water. We'll mow. We'll get better and better and better. Yay! And he put a finger in the air. The crowd clapped and yelled and stomped their feet.
M also stood and clamped and stomped and yelled. His little girl looked back at him over his mother's shoulder and waved. M waved back. Buck, 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 they chanted. And Buck raised a finger again to quiet the people. The epitome of the American dream is the American home. Yay, Buck. And a pool. And a larger kitchen. And another bathroom downstairs. Yay, yay. And now it's time to find out just what Liberty American Family is going to be on the Home Helper Show this fall. Mrs. Buck? The Mrs. Buck Snort stepped up and Buck handed her the microphone. Mrs. Buck Snort, Mrs. Buck Snort. The crowd remained standing to chant. The HH cast pushed out a giant triple-piece see-through toaster on wheels filled with the thousands of hopeful registration cards to be the host family for the house makeover.
The Mrs. grabbed the handle and rolled it over and over. The crowd stopped chanting and clapping and stood mute, hands over mouths and hearts, unable to breathe. Mrs. Snort stopped the toaster from rolling. The massive cards flopped one last time. Someone dropped car keys and a baby cried out. A dog barked outside. Somewhere the school custodians complained to each other about something. Mrs. Buck Snort opened the gate. She shoved her hand into the cards and kept tunneling up to her shoulder. She came out with one card in her hand and held it above her head. Mrs. S. came to the very front of the stage, stood straight and blonde. She held the microphone and the card in front of her face. She smiled. She read the card. She ceased smiling. She said. She looked back at Buck. He nodded to her to hurry the F up.
Mrs. Snort put the microphone closer to her mouth. Michael M., she said. Mrs. M. What? What'd she say? Who? Speak up. Come on, Mrs. Buck Snort. Who won? The Michael M. family. The M's are the winner, she shouted. The crowd hummed, sighed, moaned, and sat in turn. Well, he's not here. Buck moved up to stand next to Mrs. Buck Snort. He took the microphone from the missus. He has to be here to be eligible. Official rules. He's not here. We'll draw again. Mrs. Snort? He took Mrs. Buck Snort's hand to bring her back to the toaster.
Yes, I am. M stood and removed his gray felt hat with just the one small hole. His family looked back at him. His wife turned away back to the stage. His daughter reached out to M. He stretched to hold her little hand. M's wife stood and turned around again and shoved aside a metal folding chair with her foot so that M could come up to stand with the family. We are here. He grabbed his wife's hand and raised it. He picked up his children, one on his shoulders, the other in one arm, and gripped his wife's sweaty hand in the other. They walked down the row, then up the center aisle. Their steps and their breathing echoed in the gym. They climbed the stairs to the stage and stood gleaming with the home helper cast and Buck and Mrs. Buck Snort, while the television cameras zoomed and photographers clicked and flashed. The band played the home helper theme music. The cast moved the M's in between Buck and Mrs. Buck Snort with their arms around each other, and they all crouched and pointed fingers at the cameras and crowd. The principal retrieved the microphone from Buck's limp hand and began to thank everyone for coming. Make sure to watch Home Helper this fall.
Just then, the music stopped in mid-measure, and four men with Down syndrome, wearing green and black camouflage fatigues and orange face paint, appeared behind the group on stage. The men held toy black and green automatic weapons and paintball guns pointed at Buck and the Mrs. Snort and the others. More of Rosie's friends appeared at the back and side doors, blocking egress. A door opened and slammed. Rosie promenaded in from the cafeteria door, slowly, smiling, wearing a cocked black beret and a T-shirt with the black outline of Michael M.'s profile, sporting a sparse beard and beret. Rosie the Riveter sauntered up with a WWF swagger and smirk. Her T-shirt was rolled to her shoulder. She held up her arm and posed, showing her muscle. "Thank you," she said, removing the microphone from the principal's hand. Rosie stepped in front of the onstage group to address the crowd, stuck to their metal chairs by freeze-dried sweat. Good morning. Greetings. Hola. The American dream indeed, oh Jesus. Set your alarm. Wake up. She looked left and right and down and back, smiling, waving at relatives, then gritted her teeth. You. She pointed at people she knew. A woman checker from the grocery, the bank teller, the football assistant coach. Do something. Hey! The crowd jumped back in their seats and pulled their hands to their chests. Americans are guilty as sin, says the Nuremberg thing, for not doing anything. Bank accounts, people starving, guilty. Stealing, guilty. Lying, guilty. War, murder. Greed, ignorance, guilty, guilty. Apathy. Should I go on? Yes, yelled two people in the back. Silence! Rosie yelled. Rosie took a deep breath and looked toward the rear open door. And now we will ask the big, dark, handsome United Nations soccer player soldiers and those robin's egg blue helmets and the troop carriers surrounding the block to please come in and take these effing Americans away out of our sight to trial, to prison, to exile, to cry, to commit suicide, no doubt, some most assuredly to execution. She held the microphone at her side and watched the back door. The crowd sat silent. Freedom fizz ran in a stream down the middle aisle. Someone coughed, and someone could be heard crying while searching for her keys in her big purse. Buck inched away toward the door, and a man named Marvin, wearing gray and blue face paint and a Dallas Cowboys stocking hat, shoved a toy AK-47 into his stomach and said, "I don't think so." Rosie watched the back door without an expression, stone-faced. She dropped the microphone to the floor, sending a chilling echo squeaking through the giant room. "We're going to be tortured," screamed a woman to her husband. "No, brother," said Rosie. "What a bunch of retards. Go F yourselves." She nodded to her people on the stage and at the doors, and they melted away.
M squeezed his wife's shoulders tight and kissed her on the lips, then crouched down to hug his kids. A dog barked down the street, the yips drifting in through the open back door of the gym. A few school custodians reached for long brooms, and Principal Campbell began to whisper in the ears of the Homeland Helper cast that she'd like to take them all out to lunch. With clenched fists held high above her head, Rosie marched to the end of the stage, down the steps, up the center aisle and out the back door. Buck and the missus walked over and stood behind Soup Campbell until the principal invited them along to Penelope. Rosie met with her comrades in the parking lot across from the elementary. They exchanged knuckle taps and walked together toward the gas station on the highway for supersized pop. Michael M., his wife and kids, were getting their T-shirts autographed by the Home Helper cast. The janitors had divided the gym into sixths for cleanup duty. They stood in the back, leaning on their brooms, staring at the people to make them leave. Pastor Steve Cash ushered his family with both arms, heading up the middle aisle of the elementary school. John the Baptist switched off his radio, walked into his bathroom, did his business, and flushed. A man sitting on his haunches in the sun on Main Street jerked his head in the direction of the school. A helicopter pushed off from the landing pad at Gitmo. The driver of a minivan on the highway pointed out to his family a black cloud pouring from the elm trees in the middle of Homeland. Neighbor ladies visiting out of doors in the Freedom and Homeland area held up their arms and dodged a falling walker, a baby doll, a huge stroller, a bent BJ hood, and the bottom plate of a natural yellow partial. Burning chunks, like toddler steaks on the backyard grill, flashed sizzling into the city pool. Bits of brick and mortar and metal and wood rained back down upon the earth all around the bookstore, the jail, the dentist office. Workers hurried outside to look up into the sky. A siren cried. It wavered, wailed, howled, and echoed. Bouncing off the buildings, running up and down the hot cement roads, around the homes, through the backyard, searching for the children. Mothers on the other side and this side counted heads inside frazzled brains, wiped hands down aprons in preparation for springing into action. An owl hooted at seeing a motley cat leap over a yawning lion. The raptor horn atop the community center screamed out, "Bloody murder!" The train whistle tooted. The blood and molten bone poured from the elementary school gym into the scorched cement street like strawberry ice cream. Above the town, behind the post office, across the alley from the library, looking down on the burning elementary school, a group of second graders watched from the water tower's walkway. They stood gripping the railing, buckets of dripping red paint and brushes at their feet, red paint in their hair and on their arms and faces and clothes. Behind them, the newly painted, shiny gray water tower had just received another coat. "No war." The children licked at tears. They scrunched up their faces to try to stop crying. Two of the children, a dark-haired boy and a blonde girl, hugged each other and then sat, bare feet dangling in midair, swinging. Below them, on the ground by their overturned bicycles, lay their fishing poles and slingshots, and straw hat.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are about average.
And as always, we'd like to thank Rock Creek Free Press for sponsoring our show. We'd like to thank World News Trust for hosting our website at theshow.newamericandream.info. And a special thanks to Len Osanek, our producer, who keeps us on the air. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. Be sure to stay tuned for Black Op Radio, Len Osanek's show, coming up next. And come back next week, same time, same place. Thank you and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city.
On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
Black Op Radio presents Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, the DVD Complete Collection. Finally, the DVD set you've been waiting for is available. Over 15 hours with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty. Over 15 hours. Interviews with Len Osanek, John Judge, David Ratcliffe, and more. This is a one-of-a-kind set. These interviews feature Fletcher Prouty having candid conversations regarding his 23 years in the military, but specifically 9 years in the Pentagon from 1955 to 1964. His inside knowledge is invaluable to researchers of this era of American and world history. These are the revelations you've been waiting for. Over 15 hours with Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, the complete DVD collection. Available at the Colonel Prouty reference site, www.prouty.org and blackopradio.com.